In Iran, they say the U.S. is already waging war and the economic consequences are deadly. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. The fear of military conflict between the U.S. and Iran is real, despite President Trump stepping away from airstrikes. The U.S. also issued an emergency order last night telling airlines not to fly over Iranian airspace. Let's hear from Tehran, where all these diplomatic and military tensions have real consequences. Syed Mohammed Mirandi is a political analyst at the University of Tehran.
I think the real discussion in Tehran is that the United States has been engaging in war with ordinary Iranians for a long time now. The U.S. president has admitted that this is economic warfare that's happening, and people have died as a result. People who face shortages of certain medicines, such as cancer patients, quite a few of them have died already. And he calls these brutal sanctions. So he is basically brutalizing the Iranian population. This is not really all that different from a military conflict.
What is Tehran's strategy to counter these U.S. moves? Iran began enriching uranium this month. It's blamed for attacking oil tankers. Doesn't all of this just escalate the conflict?
I think Iran's strategy so far has been to show patience. Iran is the only side that is abiding by the nuclear deal. But now the Iranians are saying that, look, we cannot be the only side that abides by this agreement. And therefore, the Iranians are going to gradually decrease their commitments in order to put pressure on the Europeans to abide by their own commitments. If the Europeans decide to respect their own signatures and their own commitments, then Iran will reverse what it plans to do in the future. So the Iranians are trying to be as helpful as possible, but so far the Europeans have been following the orders of Trump, and Trump, of course, is escalating tensions in the region.
Syed Mohammed Mirandi, let's do the numbers. Oil prices rallied towards $65 a barrel amid those ongoing tensions. Elsewhere, global stocks are mixed. Now, the Paris Agreement aims to keep global temperature rises well below 2 degrees Celsius, and that requires cooperation. But Poland has blocked a push for the European Union to end its greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Backed by Hungary and the Czech Republic, Poland said it needs to be paid to end its reliance on coal. Molly Scott-Cato is a British member of the European Parliament for the Green Party.
It's obviously terribly disappointing that we've got three of these Central European countries blocking progress. And so I think we do need to find a way to break this block. But we've got to be very careful because we're already giving a lot of money to those countries. I do think we need to put pressure on. I think we've reached the end of the road with, you know, Poland basically blocking the progress. But we need to be a little bit careful about how we do that.
Well, how do you do that? Because in a country like Poland, where 80% of its electricity is coming from coal, how do you convince them to wean themselves off it?
It's perfectly possible to invest in renewable energies. You know, we've got masses and masses of coal in Britain. We've made a decision that we'll no longer burn that coal for the benefit of the planet. And I think what we say as Greens is that we need to move rapidly towards this Green New Deal. And I think that's likely to come forward during these 5 years. And the encouraging thing really is that I can remember when I myself first imagined the world without fossil fuels. And it was reasonably recently. And now everybody's recognizing that we need to get there.
Molly Scott-Cato. According to the World Bank, India remains the top country for the value of remittances sent back by its workers abroad. Hundreds of thousands of Indians work in Gulf and Arab countries, doing mainly domestic and blue-collar work. But the prolonged absence puts a strain on families, as the BBC's Stephen Ryan reports from Kerala.
They call it God's own country down here in Kerala, with its clean air and long sandy beaches. Last December, it was the first state in India to open a fourth international airport, and there are proposals for a fifth. While they're a gateway for visitors, they're also often the departure point to the Gulf states for many economic migrants. The money they send home is vital to their families and the state economy. Estimates for 2018 say those remittances added up to around $12.1 million. Put another way, 35% of the state income for the year. To get a sense of what these numbers mean, I met up with Professor Irudya Rajan, a migration specialist from the Centre for Development Studies in Trivandrum.
One man working in the Gulf supports four people in Kerala.
What's the social cost been where you have families that are split? Say you have one parent here raising children, you might have a partner in Dubai.
But social costs are very, very heavy. People are not talking about that. There are suicides. There are family suicides, elderly suicides, young people suicide. See, Kerala, we are sitting on havoc.
Travelling north from Kochi, the winding road is flanked by tall green trees on both sides. The area here is home to one of the largest concentrations of Gulf wives in Kerala. For some spouses like Smitha Girish, living thousands of miles away from their partner has had a profound impact.
Girlfriend's wife have to do the job of a husband and that of a wife, and she has to do many responsibilities. She has to manage money, she has to do everything, maintenance work, she has to bring up children, and everything she has to do alone.
You're now 45, your husband went to work abroad when you were 30. Yeah. Where would you like to be in another 15 years?
Yes. And we lost 15 years, valuable 15 years of life. We lost our enjoyment, our life, our romance, everything we lost just for money.
Whilst the economic benefits of migration are clear, the impact on society here is a much more complex picture. In Kerala, on the BBC's Stephen Ryan for Marketplace.
And finally, it's International Yoga Day as the US Secretary of State heads to India. What pose will the two countries take on trade? Join us Monday. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.